It was as if he had leaped into the maw of a purple worm, but its convulsions, whether inadvertent or not, served him in his current course as the light grew before him. He pushed his head through and tried to reach his arm above him, when he was grabbed suddenly, rudely, powerfully, oh, so powerfully. Yanked forth, he felt as if he was flying, rising up high into the air, one titanic hand wrapping around his head fully, the other grabbing at his body and hoisting him with such ease. For a moment, he feared that he had been thrown among a horde of giants, for they were all around him. But then he realized that they were too large even for giants. He could feel them. He could hear the reverberations of their thunderous voices. Not giants. Too large. Titans. The forest had thrown him into a lair of titans. Or gods, even. For these creatures were so far beyond him, so much more powerful than he. His hand hooked on one giant finger, and he pushed with all his strength, but he might as well have tried to move a boulder the size of a mountain. Gurgling through gobs of spittle and some slime he did not understand, he fought and he coughed, and finally, Wulfgar cried out for his god, "Tempus!" His voice sounded so thin and indistinct. He struggled, and the titan beast holding him cried out. Wulfgar cursed it, evoking Tempus's wrath. And then he was flying. Nay, not flying. He was falling. Standing at the edge of the Lee in the magical forest, Catti Bree began to sing once more.
"Girl, go get me, boy,"
Brunner cried, but his voice sounded distorted.
"What are you doing?"
Regis asked, his words slowing and speeding strangely, as if the magic of Catti Bree's song warped time and space itself. Then they three, too, found themselves in a strange tunnel, winding their way quickly along. This wasn't the same as Wulfgar's experience, however, for no sooner had Brunner or Regis even registered the strange effect than they came out of it, rushing out from the root of a willow tree to suddenly find themselves standing with Catti Bree beside the small forest pond once more. And there lay Wulfgar, gasping and trying to rise, propping himself up on his elbows and muttering, only to fall back to the grass. He managed to turn to face his friends at Brunner's call, his face ashen, his arms trembling.
"Titans," he rasped. "Gods! The altar of the gods!"
"What did he know?"
Brunner demanded, speaking to Wulfgar, but turning as he ended to encompass Catti Bree with the question.
"Not Titans."
Catti Bree walked over to Wulfgar and helped him to his feet.
"Nor gods."
She waited until she had the complete attention of all three.
"Reghead barbarians," she explained. "Your own people."
Wulfgar's expression denied her claim.
"Huge,"
he protested.
"Or you were tiny."
She paused to let that perspective sink in.
"A babe. A newborn babe."
Chapter 2. The Reborn Hero. The Year of the Reborn Hero, 1463, DR, Netheril. Lord Paris Ulfbinder of the Empire of Netheril shifted uncomfortably in his seat, poring over each of 100 parchments again and again. He kept glancing to the side, to his crystal ball, almost expecting another magical intrusion from his peer and friend, Lord Drago Quick, who resided outside the city of Gloomrot in the Shadowfell, the dark sister of the prime material plane. Everything Drago Quick had just told him had only reinforced that which Paris feared. The gates between the Shadowfell and Toril were growing weaker, and the pockets of shadow on Toril seemed to be diminishing. Most of Netheril's scholars, and there were many among the learned Netherese, had viewed the stronger bonds between the worlds as a great change in the multiverse, a new and permanent paradigm in the lifespan of a shade, at least. Paris Ulfbinder was beginning to grow uncertain of that, and the pile of parchments, ancient writings of long-dead scholars, Netherese and otherwise, whispered to him of things that seemed to be coming true all around him. The gates were thinning. The vibrant young lord shifted the parchments before him, drawing forth his copy of the cornerstone of his theory, an ancient sonnet known as Chilrigo's Darkness. Enjoy the play when shadows steal the day. All the world is half the world for those who learn to walk, to feast on fungus soft and peel the sunlit stalk. Tarry not in place, for in their sleep the gods do stay. But care be known, be light of foot and soft of voice. Dare not stir divine to hasten Sunder's day. A loss profound, but a short ways away. The inevitable tear shalt be of or not of choice. O I, again the time wandering of lonely world, with kingdoms lost and treasures past the finger's tip, and enemies that stink of their god's particular flavor. Sundered and whole, across the celestial spheres are hurled, beyond the reach of Dwyamer and the Windwalker's ship, with baubles left for the ones the gods do favor. Paris and Lord Drago had discussed this sonnet extensively and repeatedly, particularly the poem's volte, the ninth line. O I, again the time wandering of lonely world. Of lonely world, Paris read aloud. Of. To him, this resolution seemed a clear enough statement, more than a hint, that the magical proximity of Abir and Toril was not likely as permanent as many believed. How long? He wondered aloud, and his eyes drifted up to the dual globe and calendar he had placed on the far edge of his desk. Paris read the header of the calendar. Dale Reckoning, 1463. He knew the current year as measured on Toril, of course. He was a mathematician, a scholar, and one quite interested in the movements of the heavenly spheres, which had played no small role in his current investigation regarding the fate of Abir Toril. So naming the year should not have come as a revelation to the learned Netherese lord. And yet, it had. 1463, he muttered, and suddenly he sucked in his breath. He rushed from his chair so quickly that he sent it spinning and tumbling out behind him, and just as quickly he flopped into the chair set before his crystal ball and frantically began re-establishing the connection to the Shadowfell, to Lord Drago Quick. He was greatly relieved to find that his friend was still in his study and so heard his call. "Well met again," greeted Lord Drago, a withered old warlock of great influence and magical power. You know,